This is the Roller Coaster Podcast, and I'm your host, Lucy Q. Life is a wild ride. It has twists and turns. It's scary, exciting, and downright fun. So throw your head back, arms in the air, and come along with me for the ride. Before we get started, check out nectargrowth.com, NECTUREGROWTH.com. It's free to join, but not for long. Nectar is an extension of the roller coaster. It's where you can start your own journey of self-exploration and growth. In Nectar, you'll find different topics of interest, daily blogs, affirmations, journal prompts, and you can connect with some of the fantastic coaches that have been on the roller coaster. Soon, we'll be adding videos, meditations, live discussions, and events. Our signature course is a journey of self-improvement, and it's valued at $397. But once you join, it's available to you at no cost. So if you're feeling stuck, if you feel like you need to change and not sure where to start, start with Nectar Growth Network. Come join us. You know you're worth it. Now, let's get on with today's show. How we meet challenges, both the ones we choose and the ones that choose us, can really define how we live our lives. But having the right mindset can make all the difference. Joining me today is Eric Winters to chat about his book, Swipe Right, and how we can live more boldly. Hi, Eric.
Lucy, good morning from Sydney, Australia. Hello.
Well, good evening from Nova Scotia, Canada. And this is the thing, it really freaks me out because it's I think it's super cool. It's my evening and it's your morning. And my husband laughs when I talk to people in Australia because I think it's the coolest thing that we're two different days apart on the same planet.
It is. It's extraordinary. We live in a time of miracles, don't we, Lucy? You're on the other side of the planet. We're talking in real time. I can see you. You look like a real human being. And we can hear each other.
It doesn't cost anything.
And I'm calling from the future. So, yes, what's not to like about that?
Yeah, who's to say they're not time travelers, eh?
Indeed.
Now, your book, Swipe Right.
Yes.
Not that I've ever used a dating app because they didn't exist when I met my husband 30 years ago, but that's what it makes me think of.
Sure.
Swipe Right makes me think of like that sort of dating app thing. Where did the title come from and what's it all about?
Yeah. Well, the full name of the title is Swipe Right on Your Best Self. Swipe Right on Your Best Self. And yes, you and I perhaps have arrived at the tail end. We're a little bit too old, perhaps, for the dating, although I've done a little bit of online dating. But however, nowadays, 30% of relationships, Lucy, are created online. 30%. Extraordinary. And yes, in these dating apps, predominantly Tinder, I think Tinder kicked things off not so long ago. But Tinder presents you with a photo and a bit of a bio about the people that perhaps you'd like to choose to spend time with. And if you look at them and think, actually, that's someone I'd like to spend time with, you put your finger on the picture and you swipe it right. If you're not so interested, you swipe left and you're presented with one person after another. Now, people will spend a lot of time thinking about who they want to date, who they want to be with. And it's a good idea. You're going to spend a big chunk of your life with them, and it makes a huge impact on the quality of your life. But most of us spend less time thinking about someone else that we're going to spend even more time with in our lives, and that's ourselves. And I've called my book Swipe Right on Your Best Self because it's really a choice what kind of people we're going to be, what kind of people we choose to show up as. we tend to think about what I've got to do today, and we'll make a to-do list and we'll fill out our schedulers with action items. But we don't think about how we're going to be as we go through our day. And what my book is doing is trying to help people to decide, actually, what kind of people do we want to be? How would we like to show up so that we can look back at our lives, or even just look back at the day and say, yeah, you know what? That was a day really well spent. I'm really glad as to how I showed up during that day. There was a book title I'd like to share with your listeners, Lucy, called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying. And it was written by a palliative care nurse called Bronnie Ware in Australia. And she spent a lot of time with people in their last few days and weeks of life, taking care of them. And as you might imagine, under those circumstances, people are, they're looking back, they're reflecting, they're considering quite deeply. And it gives us perspective that's not impossible, but a little hard to get in our day-to-day lives. But when you're at the end of your life, you're looking back, considering how you spent it, you think about, yeah, what might I have changed? And what Bronnie Ware heard again and again were the same regrets. But the top regret, the number one regret she heard more than anything else was, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life that others expected of me. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life that others expected of me. The book I've written is about developing courage so we can choose to live a life aligned with what matters to us, which isn't always going to align with what our families want, what our partners want, what our society thinks someone of our gender, of our sex, of our particular age and background, what we ought to be doing. You'll be aware, and I'm sure your listeners are very well aware, that there are all sorts of subtle instructions we get really from society about how we really ought to show up, how we ought to dress. And a lot of them are so subtle, we don't even notice that we're being drip-fed these messages about how to behave, how to behave. There's a right way to dress, a correct way to dress, which will meet with social approval, and a correct way to talk, a correct way to use your eyes to maintain eye contact. There are all sorts of subtle things. Some of them are very small and insignificant, but others are quite big. Now, how you should live your life. And we all run the risk. And Bronnie Ware has underlined that it seems that a lot of people, unfortunately, don't realize until they get to the end of their lives that actually they've been living somebody else's life. They've spent their whole life trying to please others. But courage, the courage to live a life true to yourself, is something every one of us can develop. And that's what my book is about. How can we develop courage to author our own lives?
And, you know, that very part of, you know, the courage to live yourself, not others. You know, we talk about that a lot on the roller coaster, and it's that dreaded list, that list that so many of us have found. You know, it's, you're living life on, you know, it's autopilot. You graduate from college or university, you get married, you buy a house, you have your car, you have your 2.4 kids, you get the dog, you do all of this, you get the retirement package, then you retire and then you die. But
you're right.
What's happening to a lot of people, and I don't know if it's, you know, a revolution, a rebellion, I don't know what it is, but more and more I'm encountering people that are waking up going, whoa, wait a second. What in the hell am I doing here? I'm not happy. I'm doing all of these things that you've told me to do, and I'm miserable. I'm absolutely miserable. I actually went through the same thing it'll be 5 years ago this fall. I went through the same thing and I ended up throwing my life into chaos, and I probably did it all the wrong ways, but I, you know, eventually I got there in the end. I figured my shit out. But yeah, we seem to be caught in this epidemic of pleasing society and following the status quo, and it's not serving us.
No, it's not. And you've hit on some really important ideas right there. We do run the risk. If you're a human being, you run this risk, and it's living on autopilot. It is how we are designed, that unless we intentionally change track, we will follow habitual routines. Not because you're bad or defective or something wrong with you. It is how we are wired. We're wired to operate habitually. But changing direction, waking up and deciding, actually, is this the path I really want to be on? Is this satisfying? It requires waking up, but it also requires knowing where you want to go instead. So there are several skills that are required. There is the skill of waking up, coming to the present moment, you know, disengaging autopilot. And that is a skill. It's not an easy thing. And unfortunately, as you'll well know, it's not something you do once, because we slip back into autopilot. We fall back, coming back to the present moment and choosing how we're going to be. It's something we need to learn how to do repeatedly, absolutely repeatedly. And you mentioned how not that long ago, 4 to 5 years, you were unhappy. And I congratulate you on recognizing that you're unhappy and doing something about it. A lot of people will feel the discomfort and then self-soothe. In fact, I say some people, all of us are quite adept and skilled at making ourselves feel better in the short,
numbing.
And there have never been so many opportunities, Lucy, have there? Available 24 hours a day to distract, to defer, to consume, to make ourselves feel better. And I'd also say it's also cheaper than ever. Either watching Netflix, that could be your option, your Aladdin's cave of choice, or eating something or drinking something. I don't know what it's like where you are, but we have stores selling massive bars of chocolate, like a kilo in weight, and they're super cheap. They're super cheap. It's very hard. It's very hard if you're hungry, not surrendering to those urges. And this is what it is to be a human. It's not just chocolate, of course, it's alcohol and many other stimulants and sedatives. And there's such a cornucopia of options to make ourselves feel better. One of the problems isn't just the availability. It's that the messaging we get from our society tells us you should be happy. You ought to be happy. Think positive. Look, if you're not happy, then there's something you're not doing right. It's because you're not doing right. And if you're not happy, then one, you should probably think more positively, because you're thinking wrong. But secondly, you probably don't have what we're advertising. Yes, look, I've got a big poster here of happy, slim, attractive people with so many friends. And look at the watch they've got. Yes, that could be you. That could be you. Or it's a fragrance. If you smelt right, everything would change.
You'd be happy.
You'd be happy. And that's how advertising works. It creates a gap.
But it's even worse in North America. And I don't know what the advertising laws are in Australia. Mm-hmm. In North America, of course, we get piped in the US channels. Mm. So if you're not happy, they have commercials that sell the latest and the greatest drug, pharmaceutical, that you can take. Oh, if you have this problem, if you have that problem, take this pill, that pill. Never mind the laundry list of side effects that you can get from it.
Yes.
And yeah, it's frightening. It's frightening what advertising and marketing. And the funny thing is I have a background in marketing. My husband is actually in advertising. So we kind of We kind of see, we know, and it's like, you don't understand. They're just trying to get you to buy their shit, whether it's good or not. They don't care. They don't care.
The whole purpose of advertising is to make you feel needy where you didn't feel needy before. So it creates a sense of lack. And this is one of the problems that we have as human beings, that it discourages us. We spoke earlier on about the number one regret of the dying. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself. We are discouraged by the media advertising, telling us you ought to be happy now. Be happy. Society tells us, cheer up. We're told continually, hey, cheer up. Look on the bright side. You ought to look on the bright side. You shouldn't feel bad. Plenty more fish in the sea. They're in a better place. There are all of these messages we get. So our society, it's not just advertising. It's us as well. We tell others, do not feel bad. No, don't feel bad. You've got to feel good. So we've got this messaging that we're not allowed to feel bad. And as a result, we don't allow ourselves to develop the ability to be with discomfort. But if you're going to have a great life, a courageous life, doing new things, learning new things, trying stuff, stuffing up, getting better, exploring your interests, finding some of them aren't your interests, starting a relationship, everything in life that's truly worthwhile requires courage. Everything, 100% of it.
It does.
And courage requires that we have the ability to do what's meaningful at the same time as feeling discomfort. We've got to learn to be with discomfort in an emotionally intelligent way. Not in a kind of, no, I'm just not going to think about it. I'm not going to think about it. No, I'm just going to pick up the phone.
Soldier make a call. Through.
Soldier through, yes.
Soldier through. Stiff British upper lip.
And there's a place for that. There is a place, you know, for that sheer willpower, bloody-minded, brutal willpower. There's a place for it, but not as an ongoing strategy. What others will do is, instead of braving their way and forcing them through, they will soothe themselves. So they will distract. They will try not to feel the discomfort through a variety of different means. And it could be alcohol or drugs or distraction. However, there is an emotionally intelligent approach to being with discomfort that doesn't involve you being swept away and overwhelmed with discomfort, but being beside it. So it's a mindfulness technique, an attentional strategy of being able to be honest with yourself. Actually, you know what? I am anxious about this date, about this job interview, about taking on this new role, about asking for help. Yes, I am uncomfortable. And at the same time, it's important to me. It matters to build a close, intimate relationship with someone, to develop my career, to explore my potential, to learn more things, whatever. When we can hold what matters to us and discomfort, hold them in the same place with honesty, but not being overwhelmed by the discomfort, then we'll be able to take courageous action without getting rid of the fear and the apprehension, which is normal and which we're supposed to feel.
And, you know, that's one of the things that I've learned over the past 5 years with what I've been through, when I've decided how I wanted my life to look, who I wanted to be. And that was being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And even something as, you know, simple as starting the podcast. Up until recently, I would get, you know, the pounding in the chest, the butterflies in the stomach before each episode, because I was nervous. Am I going to be good enough? Am I going to be able to hold the right space for the conversation? What are we going to, you know, is all the responsibility on me to keep the conversation going? All of these things would play on my mind before I would hit record. One of the things I have found, though, is that the more you do it, the more you become comfortable with it. And it's almost like, you know, once you've reached that level, then you have a level of comfort. But the good news, the bad news is that there's another level and there's going to be something else that you're uncomfortable. So for me right now, I've gotten very comfortable with podcasting and recording because it's something that I'm doing several times a week. What I'm uncomfortable with that I'm starting to explore is creating a presence on TikTok, because somehow for me, hitting record on a little video creates discomfort. But I've also known I have the example of podcasting was uncomfortable. It became comfortable. Well, so will this. When I get used to it with practice, you know, with repetition, it becomes comfortable. And I think the same applies with being vulnerable. If you're able to be vulnerable in your relationships, then it becomes more normal. It becomes more comfortable.
Yes, it's true. We do get better through practice, through taking small steps and discovering that the catastrophic scenarios that our mind has played out seldom eventuate. But our minds do want to keep us safe, and it's what they do. They will predict that disaster will be unbearable and irrecoverable and permanent. And they're quite convincing. Minds, and this is one of the problems of being a human being. One of the, I call them the human predicaments, is that we live in two worlds. We live in the real world, and I can see you, and we can touch things and see things here, and that's all good. And all animals do that too. But if you're a human being, you get a bonus. You get a bonus superpower. You also live in an internal, imaginary world of rehearsal and remembering. And it's compelling. And apparently we spend 50% of our lives, Lucy, 50%, not actually here in the real world engaging with us, but daydreaming, 50% of our life. Now, it wouldn't be a problem if they were having fresh new thoughts, but we tend to have the same old repetitious.
Doomsday.
We go round. Oh, yeah. Oh, and we rehearse how things could go horribly wrong. Oh, if I said this, they might say that, but then I would say this, but then they might say that. And we imagine dreadful scenarios. And then we start again. Oh, yes, but I might say this, then they might say that. And we can spend huge hours and hours doing the same kind of thing.
Guilty.
But if you have a pulse, you will be doing this. And at the same time, we can get better at developing the skills to. There's a three-step approach I might share with your listeners to get off that roundabout. And I call it the three N's. The first N is just to notice. You notice what you're telling yourself, or you notice what you're feeling as it happens. But that's quite a skill, because you've got to break the autopilot and just notice. Oh, hang on. I'm having that thought again, or I'm feeling that overwhelm. But you notice it. Second N is to name it. Name it. You might just say, oh, I'm having the thought that no one's going to like it. I'm having the thought that I'm going to look stupid. I'm having the thought that they'll laugh at me, perhaps. Or another useful strategy is to name the person that would say a thing like that to you. Oh, there's moaning Minnie. There's anxious Eric. There's the emperor telling me what I ought to do. So you can name the kind of character that would say a thing like that. So we've got notice, we've got name. And then the third thing is, after you've done those two, because if you do those two, it just gives you a little bit of distance. It just lets you step off the train of thought for a moment. And now you can ask the third question, which the third N is, now what would the kind of person I want to be do? Now, what would the kind of person I want to be do? Now, this requires, you've already thought about what the kind of person is that you'd like to be and what kind of actions they would do. But once you've done that, once you've decided that actually I want to be the kind of person that really explores my potential on TikTok. I want to explore social media. I want to explore my potential and how I can reach out to a large number of people to share what I've learned. Once you've got something that matters to you, only then are you able to make a decision. It's a bit like a road journey. If you're driving somewhere, you need to know where, it's really helpful to know where you're going so that if a junction arises, you've got some criteria for deciding, do I want to go to the left or the right? Because you decided in advance that actually I'd like to get to town A or city B. So you need to know in advance. And there are choice points that arise throughout every day, multiple choice points, which we get to choose what kind of people we're going to be. We get to choose what kind of self we are going to swipe right on. And that's what my book is about, helping people to choose, interrupt autopilot, and choose to take courageous action. And it's a set of skills. It's not something you're born with or something you haven't. You know, either you've got or you haven't. It's something, it's a capability that we can all develop.
And it's an important one, because just by finding the courage to do some of these things, it literally opens up a whole new world, a whole new world of possibilities. You get to discover an entirely new version of yourself, and you get to be and do things that you never would have dreamed that you could do. But you have to take that first step, and you have to be courageous.
Yes, I entirely agree. We all live in something of an illusion. We all experience this. It's a kind of helpful illusion. It's a fantasy we all have, that we are particular kinds of people. I'm the kind of person that does this. That's just who I am. That's just what I'm like. Actually, we can be any kind of people. You can develop any quality whatsoever. You are not tethered to your past. Now, sure, you'll have some predispositions that come with your genetics, but all of us have far, far more capability to do new things and to try new stuff and to behave in new, fresh ways than we realize. And this is something we can all discover. We can, as you say, we can discover by taking small steps to begin with that actually, no, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can become that kind of person. But that's what a really fulfilling life is about choosing a path and discovering it. It's about creating and authoring a self and authoring your life. It's about becoming, that wonderful book by Michelle Obama called Becoming. That's what a rich, full, and meaningful life is. It's a continual life of becoming in each minute, in each hour, in each day. Not something we do once, it's something we do on an ongoing basis to craft a life you can be proud of and avoid the number one regret of the dying, wishing that you'd had the courage to live a life true to yourself.
Eric, you've shared some valuable information for our listeners today, and I know they're going to want to connect with you and grab a copy of your book. Where's the best place for them to do that?
Well, for most of the planet, the best place to get the book is to order it online. And it's available in paper and Kindle and ebook versions around the planet. But if you do have any listeners in Australia, then they should order it from my website, because then they can get a signed copy so that people can find me at ericwinters.com.au. And that's a good place for anyone to look into what I'm doing. I give a lot of talks on developing courage, because meaningful careers require courage. Meaningful relationships require courage. And I get so much pleasure and satisfaction from helping other people to develop their courage so that they can become more of who they'd really like to be. And all my talks and workshops are described on my website, ericwinters.com.au.
If you're listening and you're looking at connecting with Eric, make sure you check out the show notes. I'm going to have all of the links in there. And Eric, thank you so much for joining me.
It's been my pleasure, Lucy. Thank you for having me along.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Roller Coaster Podcast. Want to chat or share your ideas about today's show? Pop me an email at hello@therollercoasterpodcast.com. Don't forget to connect with me on Facebook and Instagram at The Roller Coaster Podcast. Our theme song, Roller Coaster, was performed by The Lucky Setback. Audio editing by the one and only Jeff Quigley of Quigley Creative.
Life is like a roller coaster, baby, baby. I wanna ride, 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 ride. Life is like a roller coaster, baby, baby. Bye.